Right. Hello and welcome to Miles and Musicals. I am obviously Miles. And I suppose the best way of explaining this is I really wanted to talk about musicals, and I thought the best way of talking about them was by talking, I suppose. That's the best way to explain it. And this stemmed from me re-watching Phantom of the Opera, which was the 25th anniversary version, and then reading the book, and then watching the terrible, terrible, awful film adaptation, which I will talk about in due course, because my god, is that thing awful. It's so bad, I can't believe you could take such an amazing piece of work and turn it into whatever happened there. It's distressing. But I suppose my love for Phantom of the Opera stemmed from when I was about maybe 13, 14, and for some reason Channel 5 had the rights to show the 25th performance just occasionally, and I happened to stumble upon it. And it was the moment, the mirror moment, during, it was during the mirror. And obviously it's that amazing moment where she turns to the mirror and then she sees the phantom through it, and then it leads into Phantom of the Opera. And the way this is entirely acted and everything, it just astounded me as such a young kid how this could be made. And the 25th still stands out as one of my favourite pieces of theatre because of how lovingly crafted it was and how much care they put into it. To be able to stage it on this amazing place, as well as create this entire world and narrative within this show, and be able to set it in such an amazing way. Now, my problems with the film are vast and countless. For one thing, is that they hired Gerard Butler, and now I know this has been said 9 million times over, but the man can't sing. And for many of the people in the film itself, they can sing, but they don't sing with any passion. And that's the outstanding trait I find with many Broadway and West End performers, is the sheer amount of passion that they perform every single show with. Like, every single night they will be going out there and giving it 100%, and you just don't find that in the film. They're just singing the lines with no emotion behind them. There's nothing there for you to connect with, because they're just singing the notes with none of the backing of what they're singing behind them. It's like, trying to think of an example of this, but All I Ask of You, and including the right reprise as well, because that still astoundingly annoys me, but the way that they're singing it is that they don't sound like two people who are falling in love or affirming their love for one another. They just sound like they're singing the words and that's it, which is not what you're here for. You're here for them actually singing their hearts out, and that's what they should be doing. And also, as an aside, I don't know why they changed the story, because even in the original book it's not as creepy as they made it in the film. I don't know how they managed it, but they made it so much worse, because then the phantom is teaching it from when she's a much young kid, rather than like the 20-year-old Christine that she is in the musical. I don't know why they felt the need to change it to make it really, really weird, but they did, and it's really strange. There are so many artistic changes within that film that just confuse me, because including the Phantom's deformity, which for some reason now looks like he's just had a bad case of sunburn, and there are some sores on his head, which is unbelievable given the amount of prosthesis the actual Broadway and West End phantoms go through. Like, Ramen for the 25th had to spend 3 hours in the makeup chair to get all his prosthesis on, and Gerard Butler can barely manage maybe a thin layer of it. And they also let him keep most of his hair, which is weird. I don't know why it's such a weird way of doing it, because, you know, he's supposed to have this horrible deformity which has shunned him from society, and it's not even that bad. He could have gone out after he put some aftersun on. It's so weird. But there are a couple of things to like about the film. There aren't many, but there are a couple. One thing is how alive the Opera House feels. That's very nice. The set design was good in that, and filling up with as many people as they could possibly get in some notions. But also, the managers are great. They really sell their roles astoundingly well. They're probably the people who do it the best, because they are obviously the comedy relief, and they can sort of go off the rails a bit and have those comedic moments. And even like Notes One is actually quite funny, even though it's held in the world's blandest set, which is another thing. The sets are so weird. They feel very washed out, especially in their lighting. Like, the entire foyer area feels like it's being lit by LEDs, when most of the time they were using, you know, candlelight, and it just feels very strange. It feels incredibly washed out. Even the masquerade scene, which is supposed to be this burst of colour after they're, you know, celebrating that the Phantom's been gone for 6 months, they have a new chandelier, everything's great, and they're all in black, white, silver and gold, which is strange because the stage show is so full of colour. And everyone's costumes different, you know. And it's supposed to be, you know, a massive celebration, as well as singing a song to mock the Phantom, that, you know, they can wear a mask for some of the time, but they don't need to all the time because they're accepted by society sort of deal. But also the fact that certain lines which were meant for Christine and Raoul as they join the dancing are given to other people. And also the fact they moved when the chandelier crashes, which is an egregious crime. I don't know who decided that, but who did? I want to talk to them, because, like, why? Why would you change it? I know that the chandelier crashing is supposed to mark the end of Act 1. It's, you know, intermission. You're supposed to go away 15 minutes, get another drink, stuff like that. The chandelier crashing is very dramatic, and it's supposed to stick in your mind. But that's what it's for. It's supposed to be a culmination of all the Phantom's, you know, sadness and anger over Christine choosing Raoul over him, which is, you know, understandable. He does have the emotional range of a 16-year-old teenager, and that's what it's there for. But for some reason, they just, you know, move along. All I ask of reprises ends right onto Masquerade. Nothing. Nothing. So the chandelier crashes at the end of Point of No Return. What? Sorry? I know it causes the opera fire, but also we've been shown previously that, you know, the Phantom knows how to use fire. He's you know, in Wandering Child, he uses fire to, you know, try and stop them escaping from the graveyard. That's an entire thing. So we know that when he sets the fire off at Point of No Return, that's when, you know, the opera house sets alight. That's the entire thing. But they removed the pyromania scenes for a really awkward sword fight in which the Phantom doesn't win, and it's just pointless. Who decided it? I don't know. It's so strange the way they structured the film, and it's not even relevant to the show itself. There's some bits as well they use from the original book, which is fine and all, but again, you are adapting the musical and not the book. They are two different entities at this point. They are not the same thing. They are completely different. And it is astounding to me. Like, I get, you know, book references are cool and all, you know, his torture chamber, the thing with all the mirrors and the hanging noose, that's very cool and all, but if it's a 2-second reference that most people won't understand, given the book was published in 1911 and are not on many people's radar unless they've watched Phantom of the Opera enough times to want to read the book, they are pointless. They're fundamentally useless. And it annoys me. As much as I was there enjoying the fact that I could point out the references and all, again, there's going to be very small amounts of your audience who know and realise and actually enjoy the references that you're doing. They are just so weirdly placed. Like, the horse, for instance. Cool. It's a cool piece, you know, but ultimately pointless because, you know, you have all these amazingly smooth transitions from the walkway above and they go down and then they're in the boat. And that's cool. It connects the song in a very seamless way. And it's very nice to look at. It's very nice visuals. But if you add a random fucking horse there, why? It's pointless. And, like, what does it add? Nothing. It's fundamentally useless. And it's just so weird. Especially... but... okay. So... I can always kind of tell if I knew the film was going to be bad when I watched the clip of, you know, the title song, Phantom of the Opera. It's supposed to be the big, huge moment. It's supposed to be, you know, the biggest moment in the entire musical, apart from maybe Final Lair. And it's, you know, and it's bad. It's shit. It's really, really bad. I don't know who was doing the camera operating or the editing or anything like that. But why was, you know, the shot of the most famous high E in, you know, musical theatre history, a shot of the back of her head in a boat? Who decided on that? Who decided that was going to be a good thing? Why did you decide that was going to be a good thing? Because, you know, it's supposed to be one of the biggest moments. It's supposed to be, you know, a culmination of all the music lessons and everything. And, you know, she's supposed to be shocked that she could even make that note with her voice. And the shot is of the back of her head. Why? It's so much of why. Why would you do this? Why was this the decision? And, you know, what does it add? Doesn't add any. And then, you know, and then you go on to Music of the Night, which isn't actually sung very well. It's actually sung very poorly. And it's not even that thrilling or exciting. It's supposed to be, you know, the Phantom at his smoothest. He's supposed to be the one in control now, or he's supposed to be very vulnerable and sad, like Ramin is, and I really like that. It's very well done. And Gerard Butler just sings it like a creep. It's really weird. It doesn't make any sense. It's like He's trying to sing the songs like they're pop songs when they're not. They're very traditional musical theatre, bordering on opera at times, and he just sings it like the most generic ass pop song known to man. And it's not a pop song. It's very much never been a pop song. And also, that's another thing. They add a generic ass pop song at the end in the credits, sung by Minnie Driver. Which is just a weird decision. Who decided that again? Who made the decisions other than the director, who also directed Batman and Robin, which was already a bad vibe? Like, who? You got the man who directed Batman and Robin to direct Phantom of the Opera. You could have waited a few more years to adapt to this. Instead, it was adapted into a film that most people forget because it's so bad. Just And then they come in 2011 with the amazing recorded 25th Phantom of the Opera at the Royal Albert Hall. Was in the best Phantom, Christine and Raoul performers that there is. And Hadley was also his first time playing Raoul, which is indefinitely impressive. And I'm going to go on and now talk about that. So, obviously, this was filmed in celebration of 25 years on the West End, which is an important distinction because it opened on Broadway a few years later. And this kind of... although they are obviously hosting it on a much smaller stage, like, Royal Albert Hall isn't made for musical theatre, it's made for concerts and the proms and various stuff like that. It's made for musical review, not the musical theatre. And somehow they managed to utilise the space in a really creative way. Like, a lot of the sets are reflected on sort of screens that the people can see, and then there's also a massive projected screen above the orchestra, who now have to be elevated to make more space for the stage, which makes sense, and more space for the audience. And this version is, it's sublime. It's unbelievable how they could work so well with the space, but the actors are also putting their everything into these performances because they know that they are celebrating 25 years. They know this is going to be streamed into cinemas and then put onto DVDs and Blu-rays, and they act accordingly. Ramin puts on one of the best performances of The Phantom, bar none. He adds so many more dimensions to the character that you would even think about. Like, if for instance in Phantom of the Opera, the way that he acts, he knows that he's in control, but he's still doubting whether or not Christine is under his thrall, under his spell. But most importantly, when they're in the boat and he's singing, and then suddenly she responds, he does this wonderful double take, as he wasn't expecting for her to respond. And it's little moments like that which make all the difference. And even the way that he delivers, like, single lines. Like, he says, my angel of music, in such a way that you're just sat there like, oh my god. Like, this guy's serious. Like, he knows what he's doing. But even then, Stranger Than You Dreamt It is not... It's a song that's there. It's not really one that you think of, but he does it so well because he's there, he's crawling along the floor, you know, singing out notes that I could barely even dream of, and acting so damn broken, and you understand why he's broken, even before the final air, even before you hear sort of the rest of his story, you understand why he's like this, because you've seen that small glimpse of the deformity before he starts, you know, shouting. And I have to admit, every time that Ramin says, you little viper, I think he's saying, you little fucker. And I'm not sure if I'm hearing original lyrics and they had to change them. But if he's actually saying, you little fucker, that is the funniest thing that I've ever heard. And it also is quite good for the character. He's cursing her out in such a visceral form as he chases around. And he, just the way that he acts out the Phantom, you really feel for him. You're like, maybe toned down on the anger, the possessiveness, but you get why. He just wants love, he just wants some understanding, and he thinks that he can get that understanding from Christine, at least in some form or another. Although he would like her to be his wife, which, you know, understandable. Christine is an amazing woman, and same, to be honest. But, you know, it's even in his way that he acts in All I Ask of You, the reprise, when he's hearing them singing, he's got his hands over his ears and he's just whispering to himself, no, 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 and you're just there like, ah, you know, this guy's fucked up. But does he genuinely love Christine in this version? Yes, I do believe he does. The way that he sings Christine, I love you, it moves me to tears every damn time I hear it. The man can say that in such a way, and the way that he's looking at her with such innocence after the complete batshit insane tirade he's just been through is unbelievable. He adds so many multifaceted, he adds so many dimensions to this character that you just wouldn't even think about before. And even in the book, he is a very sad, broken character. Sometimes he talks about himself in like the third person, and you understand why. Again, he's been alone for so long, and you get why he's like this by the end. And you don't know, again, obviously there's a whole thing like, where do you land? Do you land with the Phantom, or do you land with Raoul? And for much of it, I definitely would go for the Phantom in some aspects. In the film, I'd definitely go for Raoul, because the Phantom in the film is a piece of shit and does not deserve anything, frankly. But with Ramin's Phantom, I do feel a lot more sympathy for him. I understand why he's done these things, and I get it. I get it. And that's the best way of saying it. I get it. He didn't go about the best way, but I get it. It makes sense why he's doing these things. Even if he did go through them in completely the wrong way, and maybe he shouldn't have done it in such the way. Maybe he should have, you know, presented himself as a person before making Christine believe that he was an angel, which was, you know, already weird power dynamic in all the different ways. So, okay, now on to Christine, who's obviously played by the amazing Sierra Borges. If I butchered your last name, I apologise. But again, it's adding all of those sort of layers together. And I think this sort of understanding shows so well in the final lair scene. She is acting her goddamn heart out within that scene itself. It's so impressive because you can see everyone's getting very hot and sweaty under the light, and everything's got to come out in this final song. But it's the moments after the final song which matter the most, because obviously she comes back to the Phantom to return his ring. But then she looks back, and you can see this little moment of indecision of whether or not she's making the right ones go Raoul. She turns back, the Phantom nods to her, but she still turned back as she sings her final lines, and that completely changes the entire thing. I don't know how they managed to do that, but it completely changes that entire moment, because it's like she is singing to the Phantom and waiting for him to respond, but it's Raoul who does it first, so she goes with him instead. And it breaks me. It's so good. It's so massively done. And I did not expect for just one turn to look at him would change the scene so fundamentally. It's so strange. It's unbelievable. It's unreal how, you know, how that understanding of what you're acting out, and even changing it to maybe fit your ideas of what happened, because obviously Ramin and Sierra were also in the original run of Love Never Dies, which is the Phantom sequel that I do like, which is an not popular opinion, but I like it, apart from the ending, because that's the worst. But with that, they could go forward with that understanding of what was going to happen to their characters and maybe bring it into the performance itself. Because obviously they are acting until 10 years later and they know what's going to happen. They have an idea, they've sung the songs, they've done the performances, and now, because they know, they can lead on with that understanding. I don't have much to say about Hadley other than the fact that he's an amazing actor and I wish I've seen him in more stuff. I know that he's in the, maybe in the 25th Les Miserables. I think he acts alongside Ramin, and Ramin seems to be collecting 25th performances, like their trophies, which honestly good for him. So again, he also is an amazing actor for his first time playing that role. It is quite amazing how well that he, how much he brings to it. It's really impressive, that's for sure. I think one thing you can tell about this entire performance is the care and love that is put in with every single performer, because they know that this obviously is a huge celebration. They know what's happening. They know that this is going to be, again, they know it's going to be recorded. They know that this is going to be extremely important. And even with minor characters like Madame Giry, the managers as well, they know that this is going to be extremely important. Because it's going to be watched by people many years later, including me now, 10 years later from when it was originally performed. It's still an incredibly important piece because you don't get pro shots very often. You don't get pro shots on such a grand scale. And even when they know maybe they made a mistake, for instance, in Final Lair, Ramin gets the suit jacket caught on the Punjab lasso as he's releasing Raoul. He realises that and he has to strip the jacket off. And he does this on the first night of performing. And then he realises, hang on, I'm actually going to have to do this on, you know, the further two performances, because all of this is going to be recorded and then compiled, edited and then streamed out to people. I have to keep that continuity going. Otherwise it's going to look weird and they're not going to be able to piece together the best bits of the performances into this cohesive whole. And you realise that, and it's actually like, it's a great amount of care that was put in. And even when they're in that final air bit and they're all very much, they're at their best performances because it's the height of all the emotion that's come through. And you can literally see some of the makeup literally melting off certain actors' faces because they're putting so much effort and, you know, their entire performing careers into this performance. And it makes, you know, all the difference to this performance. And even, I realised much, much later, after maybe my second or third time watching it, that the guy who plays Pianji is the Go Compare Man. And I didn't even think of that. It was so weird to think. I was there looking at him going for ages going, I know this man, you know, who could he be? Looked up his name. His name is Wyn Evans, obviously. And yes, he is also the Go Compare Man, as well as Pianji in the 25th anniversary performance of Phantom of the Opera, which was the strangest thing to think about. I didn't even clock it for ages because I'm used to him having that ridiculous hair and moustache. So I was just there like, yeah, he's just a performer that, you know, must be very famous because he has a very good voice. But no, he is also the Go Compare Man. So there's that. But I also want to talk about how well each actor sort of plays off each other. Despite the fact some of them obviously have never acted in this musical before, they have a fundamental understanding of what the characters are, despite the fact this production had only 2 weeks to rehearse. So to be able to nail that all down into the perfection that this performance is unbelievable. The way that Ramin and Sierra act off each other is unbelievable. I've never seen two people's like, fundamentally understand what the hell their characters are there for, what they're doing, their fundamental, just their understanding of what this relationship should be, what it's working towards, and how that is acted off each other is really well understood, even in the smaller scenes, because obviously Phantom Morale don't, you know, act with each other much, other than maybe in Wandering Angel and in Final Air. But again, it's not the pissing contest it is like in Love Never Dies. It's more like, I'm trying to protect this woman from you, but also, you know, Raoul is seen as a threat. He is a threat to Phantom's plans, and obviously that's, you know, he's a bit of a, you know, stick in the mud, and he is a hurdle to get over. If you get rid of Raoul, everything's gonna be fine, which, not exactly, although he, again, during the mirror scene as well, he very much comes in with, like, full anger after seeing their entire interaction, which again makes sense. He calls him a slave of fashion, which very much is true. He's a very wealthy Frenchman. It does make sense that he's saying that, but again, he's coming from a place of intense jealousy right off the bat, despite the fact he has no claim over Christine, and that's a whole other thing. But even the way that Sierra and Hadley play off each other is really good. They're really sweet with each other. It's really nice to watch. You know, you understand why they fall in love, even if it is from a fairly naive standpoint. Like, because if Christine marries Raoul, at least according to society at the time, she wouldn't be able to perform anymore. It wouldn't be of her standing to, you know, perform in theatres or even do small, you know, charity performances. So it doesn't make much sense, because music, again, is her life. She's grown up with music around her consistently. Like, again, they make note that, you know, Gustave Dallé was a famous violinist, and, you know, that music is an extremely important part of her life, and to give that up maybe is an important stepping stone, but if it's been part of your life for that long, would you give it up so quickly? And I think Love Never Dies maybe does explore that quite well, because there is that immediate desire to go back into the Phantom's world, to rediscover music and to sing again, not just for the Phantom but for herself, which is extremely important. Okay, that was my all too brief Love Never Dies tangent, which I will continue. There is going to be a future episode on Love Never Dies, and I will explore that entire musical and why I like it and why some people perhaps don't like it as much. But I'm gonna now do a few fairly basic comparisons between the film and the 25th, and sort of explore why the 25th is remembered so much better than the film, although some people, again, do like the film, and that's your opinion. I just think that it's a waste of 2.25 hours of my life. It was an honest to God waste, albeit I did drink a very nice bottle of wine while I was watching it, so that was one bonus. That was, you know, the one thing that kept me going throughout the entire thing. So obviously the first thing I'm going to compare is the Phantoms. We have Gerard Butler, and then we have Ramin. I don't want to butcher your last name, so unfortunately I think it's Caramelu. I fear that I definitely did say that wrong, and I'm very sorry. But again, with Gerard Butler's Phantom, he's a lot more threatening, he's a lot more creepy, he's a lot more, he can't sing, which is, you know, strange, because the Phantom is all about music and being able to sing, and, you know, the one thing that he uses to hypnotize is with his voice. And I don't find Gerard Butler's voice very hypnotising. I found Ramin's very hypnotising. You do feel like you're being sort of dragged under, almost like you're going sort of underneath water. You're not really sure what exactly happened, but you definitely feel under his spell, and you feel every little emotion that he feels. It's even the way that he has a lot of physicality to him as well. He does a lot with his hands, I've noticed, with a lot of his performances, especially his Phantom. He likes to use them as ways to sort of accentuate his singing in such a defined way. It feels like you talk with their hands, which is, you know, very important. He sings with his hands, and it's with every gesture and movement, and that's very important. But the way that Gerard Butler's Phantom is sort of acted out, and you know, you learn more about his motivations, you just think, oh wow, this guy is just he's just weird. He's just a creep. I don't like him. Especially the way that he sort of grabs hold of Christine during Point of No Return. It's really strange. It's just like, it's too much. Because, you know, it again, Phantom can change according to the actor who's, you know, playing him. You know, sometimes he can be a bit more strong and direct. Sometimes he can be a bit more, you know, soft and broken. But the way that Gerard plays it, it's just with no dimensions. It's just such a flat Phantom. So I have this one dimension. It's my love for Christine and also being really creepy, and that's it. That's it. That's his entire deal. And why? When you could add so much more, and like the film wastes so much time telling you about stuff that you don't need to know, and you're just there like, cool, can I learn more about, you know, the guys whose name is in the title, please? That'd be nice. But even then, with, you know, Gerard's acting, he doesn't sing with much emotion. He just sounds like he's trying to get through the songs so then he can get onto the bits where he can speak. But there isn't much speaking in Phantom, so he doesn't have very many voice lines. It's like, even the way that he delivers, like, the notes isn't very... They're not hugely threatening notes. They're just a lot of criticism, and they should be in this condescending manner, because the Phantom has been here for many years. He knows what he's doing. He knows how the theatre should be run. That you should all be taking his instruction, and box 5 should be left empty. He said that box 5 should be left empty. Therefore, leave it empty. It's really easy to think about, you know, once you think about it. You know, if you want to appease a mysterious man who lives underneath your opera house, perhaps you should leave box 5 empty. And that's just, you know, my public service announcement. Leave box 5 empty. Thank you. You know, but the way that he delivers those notes isn't in a very convincing manner. It's just a bit weird. And I'm going to now move on before I get too incensed and angry about Gerard Butler's performance as Phantom. I am gonna go on with a lot of the staging and / filming. I would cover Christine and Raoul, but we're just gonna stick to sort of the most important hitting points, because obviously Albert Hall is not very big, but they utilize their sets in a manner which makes sense. Obviously the organ is an extremely important part, so that was obviously a built set, but a lot of it obviously was projected on screens. But they also had the walkway, which was really cool, that suspended walkway. And then a lot of the times Ramin, if he was doing his certain parts, he would be standing in front of the orchestra, which was really good. It sort of showed him in that elevated position above the screens and everything like that. Made a lot of sense, especially one on the roof. Obviously he was hiding behind something. But with the film, for the amount of money that they had, everything is sort of lacking in a certain colour. Like, despite the Phantom is of quite gothic and dark and mysterious musical, there is a lot of, you know, colour and light, and you know, the costuming should look amazing, and I don't feel that like they spent any money on the costuming. or if they did it with very little, because everything seems very bland and uninspired. Because even then, like Christine's dress for the masquerade is supposed to be this amazing, like, blue, pink, purple, you know, dress, which, again, isn't very much of the times, but it's supposed to, you know, like, stand out in such a way that you're like, oh, okay, that's Christine, that's Raoul, that's... And one thing that really sticks out for me, especially in their costuming, is the Phantom's Red Death costume. It is the most disappointing thing I've ever seen in my life, because even in the book, it's described as immensely lavish costume that has, you know, the skull mask and the mask moves with his mouth, and it's supposed to look really threatening. Like, the moment Raoul sees in the book, he's like, oh shit, who the hell is this? Who are they? What are they doing here? And why do they look like this? Why do they look like the Red Death? And yeah, the Phantom, you know, costume in the film is just like a red suit and that's it, and he has a sword for some reason. Like, sure, that makes sense, I guess. Why does he have a sword? The guy isn't known for fighting, he's known for singing. Albeit, yes, he's very good with, like, garrotting people, but that's an entire other thing. And, but, you know, within the Phantom 25th, all their, you know, the Phantom's, like, cape that he wears in Phantom of the Opera, the title song, it's so amazing. I wish I owned one myself. It's so brilliantly made, and you can see, like, the crystals, like, just sort of shining, and it's just amazing. Like, you can clearly tell that the Phantom, you know, cares about his appearance, despite the fact that, you know, he has a deformed face. He's very vain in that respect, and even, like, the suit that he wears at first, which I love the little puffed up sleeves. I don't know why, but they're such a nice little detail that you just sort of keep on looking at them. But that, like, entire suit is sort of really nice and really emphasizes, like, although, you know, he does live underground in a lake, he still very much cares about his appearance. It's a very important facet of who he is. But there's another thing about the costuming within the film, is that they tried to make a lot of Christine's costumes look sexy, and it's just really, really creepy. Like, really, really creepy. Like, for some reason, like, during Phantom of the Opera, she's wearing some sort of white, like, negligee sort of thing, when she should be, like, in half a, like, costume and, like, a full-length, like, dressing gown sort of thing, which is, you know, fairly securely tied and everything like that. It's not supposed to look sexy, but for some reason in the film they had to make it look sexy, and I don't know why. It's such a weird choice. It's like, we're not here to look at that, we're here to hear the music, you know, that's the important bit. And even, like, during Point of No Return, which, you know, in the 25th she has an amazing dress on, which is unbelievable. Like, I love that dress, it's so good, it's so wonderful to look at. It, like, really stands out against the black shroud that the Phantom is wearing, and it fits in with his opera and everything like that. And for some reason in the film they had to make it the blandest looking thing I've ever seen in my entire life. And also, for some reason, you know, the Phantom is wearing a half mask, which covers, you know, the top half of his face, despite the fact that the deformity is supposed to be on one side of his face, and is supposed to be so overwhelming that he has to wear that half mask consistently, because, you know, that's the thing, that's the reason. But for some reason, when he wears that half mask, which just covers, you know, his eyes and etc., etc., the deformity magically goes away. It's really confusing. I don't get what the artistic decision behind that was. But even some of the editing in the 25th is actually better than the film. And I'm just wondering, within that film, how someone looked at some of the editing and went, ah, yeah, that's fine, that'll do. And when some of the shots make no sense at all, and like again with the high E, and it's the shot is of her in the boat, she's facing away from the camera, and they're just pulling into dock. Who decided that? Where can I find them? Who? Why? And how? Why the most important note? Why that? And I'm sorry I'm reiterating that point, but why? Just why? It makes no sense. But even then, like, the entire film just doesn't have... Just the vibes are off. It's not right. Like, again, people can enjoy it, that's fine, but the only way you can make me watch that film again is that if you plied me with so much alcohol, I wouldn't realise what I was watching. Because it just feels so much like that. It's just, like, it was made because, obviously, Phantom is very famous. And obviously, they were going to make a lot more money off it if it was a film. But then it just wasn't very well received because they didn't hand it off to a director who knows what, you know, who would know what they were doing. Like, the Hairspray film is amazing. It's really good. Like, I think they cut only a couple of songs from that, and it still was a very cohesive whole. It was very well done. It really captured the spirit and essence of the stage musical really well. But with Phantom, it just feels like it was made to make the money rather than for any passion behind it. And that is where I'm going to end, because I'm slowly getting up to the hour mark and I feel like I've talked a lot. My voice is getting very dry. So I'm not sure exactly how this is all going to work, but again, this is a new endeavour that I'm making. Obviously, I am Miles, your host. And again, I'm making this because I love musicals and I love talking about them. And I'd love to talk about them to you guys and sort of explore more about what they are. For instance, I've been recently listening to Natasha Pierre and the Great Comet of 1812, which was a musical that I did not expect to like as much as I did, but that is so good and I could talk for so long about that. But also, you know, visiting musicals that you guys could suggest as well, maybe ones that I haven't listened to before, and even ones that maybe I listened to and maybe I didn't like, because, you know, that happens. You could even force me to watch the Cats film if you really, really wanted to. If you really wanted to hear me talk about Cats, you could really do that. And even then, like, talk about new musicals, like, obviously, Andrew Lloyd Webber had a new musical out called Cinderella, which I do like. It's quite divisive, again, but I quite liked what I listened to. But also the Back to the Future musical, which obviously has recently come out as well, which I'd love to talk about, if only they released the album for it so I could listen to the songs. Again, there's only been two released, and one of them is a re-recording of Back in Time, which, you know, Huey Lewis in the News a long time ago, and Put Your Mind to It, which is a really good song, and I want to hear more, but I've just got to wait patiently, very, very patiently, for them to release the Cast album. But again, I've listened to a lot of musicals, so, you know, you can suggest them to me. I'm going to work on getting sort of a Twitter page up, maybe, for this podcast and sort of see how it goes. But again, thank you very much for listening, and goodbye.